We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like your boy Foch, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. Whether you were Tyrese Haliburton dealing with a hamstring injury that took time to get back to normal, this is why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or as we like to call it, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you're going to want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in the United States or Canada, it doesn't matter. There's hundreds of other locations across the globe. Access to a center is easy and affordable. How much cash you got on you? Oh, doesn't matter. I bet you could afford Unified Healing and what the EE system is bringing to the table. Now, if you're interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That is UNIFYD healing.com/pace. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system.
Happy Saturday, Pacer Nation. What's going on? Welcome back to your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Golden. I was asked by Ty Windisch of the Eurostep Podcast Network to be a guest on his show to do a Pacers-Bucks preview. And you know what? We decided to air it on both feeds because it would be great for Pacers fans to kind of get an idea and a perspective of from the Bucks' point of view. So great to hear from Ty and get his thoughts on what the Bucks can do in this series with or without Giannis, what he expects to happen in this series over seven games. And will it go that long? I think there's a lot of things at play here, but me and Ty try to cover all the ins and outs of how this series could look and try to give you a different perspective on it. So I want to encourage you guys to listen to this. Ty knows his stuff. He's been on this podcast multiple times. We had him on earlier this year to preview the in-season tournament game. And guess what? After that, the Pacers won. So maybe it's good luck for us to have Ty on the show. And then, hey, maybe that leads into us beating the Bucks. You never know. So anyway, want to thank Ty so much for setting this all up. But Pacer fans, I have noticed that you guys have done a great, great job responding to the new Setting the Pace merchandise that we have put out. I've seen different people sharing it. People like the picture that I posted of me with the new STP shirt that I have with the arm dunking the ball and the P. You know what? It's great. It's available on tpublic.com. Follow the link in the description. Only $16 a shirt. You really can't beat that. You got to pay for shipping after that, obviously, but still, $16 for a shirt is relatively cheap. So great material. You can go with the classic t-shirt if you want, but I actually went with the heavyweight one because I kind of like my t-shirts a little bit thicker just to make sure that, you know, it's a better quality shirt, and it is great. It's only like a dollar more. It's like $17 instead of $16, and the quality is fantastic. It's soft. It feels good. It lays nice on me, so it fit to size as well. So just want to encourage everybody, if you haven't already, go over there, Tee Public, get a shirt, really not that expensive. And all that support really helps us out. So thank you so much for doing that. But let's go ahead, take a quick break. We come back, my conversation with Ty Windisch, previewing this series, and then we'll be back tomorrow, Bocce and I, with Derek Schultz to recap game one of Pacers Bucks. So be on the lookout for that, but hope you guys enjoyed this lengthy, about 70, 75-ish minute preview of Pacers Bucks from not only our perspective, but a Bucks perspective.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's time. It's almost time. We're recording the day before the series starts, but it's just about time. Bucks, Pacers, the rivalry. I keep forgetting it's like a rivalry and they hate each other. There's so much that's happened for both teams since the Bucks and Pacers played each other 85 times within 3 weeks, way back early 24, late 2023. But I'm here with Alex Golden of the Setting the Pace podcast. I'm Ty Windisch of the Eurostep. Very excited to just dive into everything Bucks, Pacers. Alex, are we rivals now too? Do we have beef because of the teams we cover? Where are you at on that?
I mean, for the next couple of weeks, I probably won't be your friend. But
yeah, that's fair.
after this series, we'll go back to being friends. But I will say this. Tyrese Halliburton did say on a podcast that this is not a rivalry until the Pacers can beat the Bucks in the playoffs. So
okay, well,
I feel like
it's, no, they're making it. He's making it too hard.
Well, that's
I think it's a rivalry now. I think it's a rivalry now. I think now that they're going to beat in the playoffs, I thought it was before just because – we don't have that many NBA rivalries anymore. No. I feel like we have to take what we can get.
This is probably the best storyline going into any playoff series out of all the teams out there in terms of like what happened this season, right? Because there's
this season for sure.
Yeah. Like the in season tournament game, you know, Tyrese doing the Dame time, Dame telling him to be humble, Malik Beasley saying we'll probably see him in the playoffs. God. It won't be good for him. God. Then he doubles down on it and
practice. I need to speak on this. I'm glad you brought it up. I said I don't like this at all in response to the double down, which, first off, a lot of people say, oh, you think he should say he's scared? Obviously not. You're dumb. He's like looking away and mumbling for half of it. It wasn't like he was like, yeah, it's going to be sad for them. He's like, I meant what I said. It's going to be – and maybe it won't be, but I think it will be sad for them. It wasn't exactly like an inspiring speech that had everyone running through the tunnel ready to go to war. And I don't like it. There's probably nothing better he could have done in that moment. The problem, of course, was saying it way back when with Chris Haynes. And this is what I've maintained. Like, you're writing a check that you cannot cash. Like, Malik Beasley, you're not going to be the one who decides this series. Not even a starter anymore. I mean, listen, has played well with the starters, everything else. Has had a horrible last almost 2 months now since March, which has not helped the Bucks' fortunes in that time whatsoever. But it's like, you're not the one who needs these big quotes. If Dame said it, I'd be like, sure, whatever. But like, that's why I don't like role players being out here like, oh yeah, it's going to be sad for them. I just don't like it. I recognize in that moment he was asked about it. I think he for sure couldn't be like, take it back. I think that is worse. It's just not a good situation to be in my opinion.
Right. I mean, and he probably felt more confident saying it when he was a starter, right? Now that he's coming off the bench and playing poorly the last couple of months, it's not been great for him. So, yeah, I think that's what kind of made it so surprising was just that here's a role player on the Bucks that's clearly just a piece, right? Like, not the go-to guy, not the factor. And he's the one talking trash to the Pacers after they just beat him 4-1 in the regular season.
That's like, the other thing.
Felt so unnecessary.
It just seems weak to me. Like, oh, if we play them for a 6th through 10th time, they're really going to – like, maybe just play better in the first 5. Maybe that could be the message you send instead of getting ran off the court. Yeah. Regardless, that's enough beef talk, I think. I think we all know it's going to be a hard-fought series. I don't seriously anticipate there's going to be, like, any brawls or anything like that. I mean, I think especially the part with Giannis not being around and him being – obviously so involved in the game ball thing, at least early in the series. I don't anticipate it's going to be that much extra, but I think there's going to be some chirping for sure. I mean, I think in the in-season championship game, that's the most I've ever seen Tyrese Halliburton chirp mid-game. And yeah. I thought he actually toned it down quite a bit for the game after that, even though I thought that might have even been more satisfying after the Dame comments and everything else. But I did think watching that in-season tournament game, like, oh, Tyrese is going to be annoying now if this is how he's going to be. And obviously, Oshkosh guy, I live in Oshkosh, big fan of him as a player. I think he toned it down a bit since then. And then obviously, I do think so much time passing will have changed it a little bit as well. But I mean, it's playoffs, right? It's going to be heated no matter what. But what are your thoughts, I guess, on the mindset of these teams coming in? Like, do you think this is still something, obviously Tyrese said, you know, it would not be till after the playoffs, whatever. But do you think like both teams are kind of more focused on like what do we have to do to have a good playoff run here, not we hate those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of both involved, to be honest with you. I feel like both teams are going to remember what happened in the regular season. They can try to compartmentalize it as much as they want to. But at the end of the day, like once the ball goes up, I think they'll kind of forget about it, just play basketball because they know there's a bigger prize here. And Tyrese Halliburton's a guy that's never been to the playoffs. So this is his first opportunity to kind of put the Pacers on the map a little bit as more than just a little in-season tournament run team, right? As a team that, hey, they can actually take down someone that people probably viewed as the biggest threat to the Boston Celtics coming into the season. Now, we know this Milwaukee Bucks team is not who maybe we thought they could be at the beginning of the year. There's been a lot of changes. You know, Dame's gone through a lot. It's been an interesting dynamic with that team. But, you know, the Giannis injury, all that, I think Indiana at this point, they're trying to prove that they still belong and that what they had was not just a fluke, where the Bucks are trying to say, okay, let's get past this first series. Let's get Giannis healthy. Let's make this run that we're capable of doing. So I think, you know, everyone's going to be more focused on let's win these basketball games. And like you said, the chirping will happen. There'll be some chippiness. It always happens in a 7-game series if it goes that far. But, you know, there's always that back and forth just because you get tired of playing each other, especially if it's a long series. So I think they're going to put, you know, bygones aside and just really focus on the basketball part of it. But I could see some, you know, pettiness here and there.
Oh, yeah.
From different players.
100%. So I guess let's do injury report before we can kind of dive into the matchup. So, of course, the big one everyone's talking about, Giannis. I wish I could tell you exactly his status. I'd gain a lot of followers very quickly if I could. My read on it has always been I think he will play at some point in this series. I don't think he will play early. I don't think he'll play in at least the first 2 games. Again, obviously not sourced. Nobody has the inside Giannis info. We just keep getting the same report packaged differently for more clicks over and over. But it's going to be some matter of weeks from when the injury happened, which again, of course, was he sat out the last 3 games of the year, and then we have this long break for the play-in. So that would line it up to be sometime during the series. I think the Bucks' fortunes will play into this, for example. And to be clear, I'm not predicting this to happen. If they won the first 2 without Giannis at home, I probably would not bring back Giannis until game 5, personally. I mean, knowing at worst you're going to be tied up and you still have home court and just give him all that extra time with the calf, you know, it's like you're not going to have a long break again, no matter what, unless the run is over, right? Those are the 2 options. So I think it's going to kind of depend. We'll see what happens. I obviously hope they don't rush him back, but that's the Giannis part of it. Dame has been banged up. He's going to play. I mean, I think I would expect that he will be doing fairly well physically. I mean, he had like some nagging things bothering him, but again, he's also had some time off. He was a full participant in practice on Friday, and Doc said he looked good. Pat Bev has a wrist thing, and it's like his offense just seems as boom or bust as ever. I mean, he had like a 20-10 game against Boston. He's had 2-point games against Orlando. I think it's somehow – I mean, credit to him. I think he's really fighting through something here. He's going to play. He's going to start. It's just he's dealing with something in his wrist. But Pat Bev's offense, kind of a journey anyway. And it sounds like A.J. Green will play too. That's actually a big deal. I mean, we can get into, I think, bench X factors as we go here. He could really be one. He had an ankle sprain, but he practiced as well. And on the Pacers side, I'll let you cover details. But I know Mathurin out, a big deal given how well he played against the Bucks in these games. I mean, a really big deal, especially given some of the wings I think they've been playing instead of him have not shot the ball the same as Mathurin.
Yeah, so Mathurin had a shoulder injury that he sustained against the Dallas Mavericks, and that caused him to have season-ending surgery.
Sucks.
And that was a big bummer because he was playing really well at that point, too, and he shot around 41%, I think, this year from three, and was really stepping up his game in terms of offensively and then learning how to play defense. We saw he had some great games against Milwaukee, and if you go back and look, like I think he was averaging around 18.5 points per game off the bench mostly, too. I think he started one or two of those games, but most of those games he came off the bench. And he really relished in that role against them. So I think that was a favorable matchup for him. So not having him will be a kind of a big deal for the Pacers. But they do have Pascal Siakam now, which I think does kind of counter that, right? So, but you look at Obi Toppin. He hurt his ankle against the Cavaliers the Friday before the season finale on Sunday against Atlanta. He was able to play in that game Sunday against the Hawks. Did not play particularly well. I think he was just 2 of 6. Didn't have to do a whole lot. It wasn't much of a game. But Carlisle mentioned at practice on Friday, I believe it was, that he had something happen to his back during practice. And so they went ahead and took care of that, and he's good to go still. So, but that's still something to monitor. Jalen Smith had been dealing with an ankle injury, I think, as well. They said he was good. And then Isaiah Jackson, the third string center for the Pacers, who actually played pretty well as a backup big against the Bucks.
I stan him. I think it's that bias, but every time, like before the trade deadline, I was like, I hope the Bucks can pick up Isaiah. And people are looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, why do they? I'm like, he's good, man.
Yeah, he is very good. He had a hamstring injury. He missed, I think, the game against the Cavaliers that held him out, but he was healthy for the Hawks game. I can't remember if he played or not. I think everybody pretty much played in that game.
Yeah.
Because they had like 157 points, so.
Yeah.
It was crazy, but I mean, Isaiah Jackson, they said he was good to go. So there's nobody really outside of Mathurin. And so that's a big one there. But, you know, obviously with the Bucks, Giannis, the big question mark, when does he come back? How does that impact the series? It's a major, you know, loss for Milwaukee, major addition to bring him back. But you also have to be very, very careful about not bringing him back too soon for having a longer sustained injury over the next couple of months if it goes into the offseason. So That's a big deal. I think that it's been talked about a lot as a big storyline, but I mean it's probably the storyline of this series because he's the best player in the series by a long shot, and it just changes so much if he's not in the game.
Well, and I think, you know, even tying the things like Isaiah Jackson's minutes, I would imagine they'll ramp up quite a bit if Giannis is able to play, because I think he's probably one of their better Giannis defenders, the Indiana's, I would say. I think he actually did a pretty good job on Giannis when he, as well as anyone can do, as any mortal can do. I mean, obviously, it's extremely difficult. But I wonder if we'll see his minutes ramp up when Giannis returns. We'll see how Carlisle handles it. But yeah, I think, you know, we were talking about that last day of the season, and Rohan and I were just dispirited because, I mean, the Bucks looked very bad in the Orlando game, and now it seems like Dame was maybe feeling more injury than he had let on at that point. But whatever, it wasn't a good game for any stretch of the imagination. And you know, the Bucks could have been the 2 seed, which now we know got you Philly in the first round, so maybe not the ideal spot to be, but still, it was there for them. But I think the thing about drawing Indiana, I've seen a lot of people be like, "Oh, this is the ideal first round matchup, like, way better than Philly or certain like Miami or whatever." And it's like, well, you know, I would have rather had Orlando, even though they did just cream the Bucks. Like, I think in the playoffs, even with Giannis limited, I think you feel better about that. Mm-hmm. Because Giannis, even more than most teams, has been the X factor against the Pacers. I mean, the Bucks still haven't played well, obviously, against Indy. They 1-4. But Giannis, Indiana has not really had any answer for him at all. And I think that's the kind of thing where, you know, some of these games were only close. Because Giannis, obviously, they only won when he had a Bucks franchise and career scoring record for him. And then some of the other games too. I mean, he's scoring in the 40s. I think he averaged between 30, it was like more than 30 or maybe even 40 points per game. 42. Yeah. Rohan said it to me on the last show and I forgot it. You know, like they couldn't stop him. It just, you know, Indiana was able to score so much that they could win the games anyway. But yeah, it's probably the worst maybe first round matchup to not have him for a few games, because nobody else on the Bucks has had much success against the Pacers at all this season. I almost think it helps that the Bucks changed a little bit with getting Pat Bev. I almost think it helps Indiana changed a lot, because it has been a different Pacers team. There's been so much that's happened that I do wonder, like, will it look the same to start, or will the Bucks maybe, I mean, obviously they're still running fast. They can still score 157 points, but I do wonder if, I mean, Mathurin, the injury, and then Hield, of course, in the trade, you know, will there be a little less spacing that'll help the Bucks defensively? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Because I've identified, you know, Nembhard, I think, has had a great season. 35% from three, not awful at Brook Lopez level, but, you know, you'll live with him. And then Shepard's been playing a lot off the bench, and he's been even worse. And I wonder, is that going to help the Bucks maybe defend this team with a little more success than they did in the regular season?
Yeah, it's definitely a great point, because Buddy Hield spacing, it was so huge. And I know Caitlin Cooper's done a great job kind of, you know, highlighting a lot of the way the Bucks covered the Pacers when Buddy was out there. It just allowed so much more spacing for Tyrese to get to the basket. And yeah, so you take out Buddy Hield, you put in Andrew Nembhard, you're getting much better defensive help with Andrew Nembhard as the primary defender, but you're also missing that floor spacing. And Aaron Nesmith, while he shot the ball great in the first like 50-some games of the year, the last probably 20-ish games when he came back from his little injury that he had after the All-Star break, hasn't shot the ball as well either. So I do think it kind of shrinks the floor. And then you add Pascal Siakam in there for Obi Toppin, and Pascal is an average three-point shooter as well compared to Obi Toppin, who shot 40% this year. So it's one of those things where the Pacers are a totally different team than they were when they played the Bucks in those first five games, because of who they have on their roster and the personnel that's available to them. So that definitely does, I think, make it easier. And Tyrese has not shot the ball well either. Yeah. After coming back from his injury, I think he's been about a 32% three-point shooter since he came back from injury.
And has there been an uptick recently before the playoffs in that, would you say? Because it seemed like soon after he came back, it was really tough. Wondering if like he might have come back early or something. I know there's been a little debate on Pacers Twitter, like, you know, is how much of this is the Buddy Hield being gone impact? How much is the injury? How much is what? It's been interesting to see it play out and kind of all the different angles on this.
Yeah, I would say that his little, you know, sidestep three that he was so like good at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
With the hamstring injury, it's been harder for him to kind of plant on that and be as effective with it. So that's definitely taken some of the leverage away. He's done a lot better job of getting into the paint and being more of a two-point scorer, which I think has really opened up his game. But shooting-wise, he's still been very inconsistent. There was a rough stretch there where he was like 1 of 9 in like back-to-back games. I think it was like a Saturday-Sunday type thing. And the Pacers lost to the Cavs. Or Sunday-Monday game, whatever. And the Pacers lost to the Cavs in that game. And he was just like flat out just talking about how bad he played. And then he found some success on the road, especially against the Clippers. They had Zubac out there playing in drop coverage, and he was just hitting everything to start the game with. So we saw Milwaukee do that quite a bit with Brook Lopez in drop coverage against Tyrese, and he was able to get some open looks. So I think that's one thing that is like maybe exciting for him about this matchup, is just that defensive coverage. But I think Milwaukee will probably not do that as much, or find some different ways to counter that pick and roll type thing with Tyrese, with Miles or Pascal or whoever. But yeah, it's one of those things where I think, back to your original question, it has shrunk the floor a lot, and the Pacers are still, you know, finding ways to get going. But offensively, they've had some games here where they've got off to slow starts. And even if you go back to, I think it was game four, the first game of the year, January 1st, the Bucks were up like 17-19-4, something like that, and the Pacers starters were just bad. You bring in Buddy Hield and Ben Mathurin off the bench, and all of a sudden the Pacers started coming back. So I think that they just don't have as much offensive firepower as they once had. But you do have to throw in that Pascal Siakam is someone that can kind of get you some ugly shots when you don't really have it. Pascal is very good at making very difficult shots and taking almost kind of weird angled shots too. So Turner stepped up quite a bit this year as well, had another good season. So I think that honestly, like, the spacing isn't maybe as dynamic as it once was, but the Pacers still have enough offensive creation. to still hurt you from outside. I think they got better defensively, which is what they really needed to get improved the most.
Yeah, I think it's really, and I'm excited to get to that side of the ball too. But for the Bucks defending Indiana, I think, you know, it will the role players and Tyrese, but I think the role players are kind of more of a swing. Like, how many threes will they knock down? How many will they take as well? It's funny your note on Nesmith, because I'd kind of circled him as like, wow, finish at almost 42%. Yeah. I thought he was like an okay shooter, but he really knocked him down. But I guess he's trailed off. We'll see where he finishes out or where he nets out for the playoffs. But I do think the Bucks' new defense under Doc, we're calling him Mr. Rivers, has been physical and about containing the paint and more kind of baiting 3-point shots to a degree, which sometimes I'm frankly uncomfortable with the looks that they'll give up sometimes, but I think they try and be selective with who they give them up with. That's why I do think some of these guys being able to knock down shots, especially like, you know, an Obi Toppin, whether he's feeling good or not, will be big. Cause I know he's been, I saw, Caitlin Cooper, everyone go check out her great work. Yeah. She's not Caitlin Clark. Apparently people keep calling her Caitlin. I'm thinking she's Caitlin Clark. I keep seeing her post about that. Different person, but does phenomenal Pacers coverage to yeah. Indiana basketball legends. But Obi Toppin like was one of like three players with 100 threes and 100 dunks or something yeah. like that. So yeah. it has made a huge offensive impact. But knocking down the threes will be important. I'm fascinated to see how the Bucks approach this defensively with their bigs. Because I think to start, I would imagine it'll be Brook on Turner, which is chalk, you know, center on center, mm-hmm. and Bobby Portis on Siakam. And two interesting things there are, can Bobby Portis do that at all? Which is going to be a big question. And I actually think it'll play into the Bucks' hands if Indiana's response is, let's let Siakam try and cook Bobby. Like, I don't think Bobby will shut him down is what I'm saying. But I think the real punishment there would be, let's have Siakam screen and like pop for Tyrese a bunch. Cause that's Bobby's biggest struggle, in my opinion, is when you put him in pick and roll, he can't drop and he likes to blitz like trap. And I just don't think that's going to work. Like, I think Tyrese is too good. I think he will find the outlet, and then Siakam's 4-on-3, and the Bucks, certainly without Giannis, just do not have the horses to contain a 4-on-3 led by Pascal Siakam. I think either you have to stay home or go under, or just switch the action. But again, you don't want, you know, I don't think you really, Pat Bev will guard Halliburton. I don't think you want Pat Bev on Siakam very often. So that's going to be tricky. But even just seeing how Portis holds up in single coverage will be obviously very interesting. If he can't do it at all, that's going to be a big issue for the Bucks. And then can they find other ways to use Lopez if Turner is pick and popping him to death? Because we've seen that, right? You mentioned,
yeah.
you know, whether he's dropping, they tried to bring him up at the level later in the series, and it's still just like those players are just too quick for Lopez to really contain at the level. So I'm wondering, will they try and stash him like on a Nembhard for a couple possessions? Will they try and put him on Shepherd when he's in? We've seen this even with Drew Holiday a little bit against the Celtics, which that's a more dangerous player than the two I'm mentioning here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that gives you other options. You could bring that player into the action, all sorts of things, but maybe just to throw off the rhythm. I think we'll see some zone too throughout the series, I would imagine. But I'm really interested to see how they manage Brook and Bobby, because Giannis is such a cheat code because you can kind of do whatever you want with him and he'll hang in there. That is not the case for the two bigs who will start for the Bucks in this series. I imagine it'll be Bobby starting at the four. That's what they've done these last three games when Giannis has been out. But maybe not. I mean, maybe it'll just be Crowder for Siakam right away. I think that coverage makes more sense, but then your offense is limited.
Yeah, that's an interesting wrinkle that I didn't even think about with Crowder starting. I feel like everyone's kind of expected Bobby to start.
Yeah.
I think Doc even kind of alluded to that in his comments yesterday, saying that, you know, Bobby is in a tough spot because they need a scoring off the bench too, so he might start and then go to the bench early and then come back with the
yeah.
second unit. So, you know, defensively, there's been a lot of questioning around Pacers world if Brook Lopez would actually guard Miles Turner or if he would guard Pascal Siakam. If you go back to the 2019, you know, Eastern Conference Finals between the Raptors
yeah.
and the Bucks, Brook was guarding Pascal and Giannis was guarding Marcus Gasol. So that's where it could be, you know, interesting. But obviously, Giannis, much different defender, defensive player of the year. I think, was he the defensive player of the year in 2019?
I think that's when he won it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about the defensive player of the year versus Bobby Porter. So it's a lot different.
And you're talking about a 30-year-old Brook versus 35-year-old Brook, which also makes a big difference in hanging with. And Siakam has really, I think, advanced as a shooter and just an overall player since then.
Yeah, Siakam shooting, it's been still like not great in Indiana, but it's gotten better. They're kind of making him adapt to them a little bit more than they've adapted to his game. So I think that's one thing the Pacers have been very adamant about. Like, you know, Pascal, you have to adapt to us. We're not going to play just, you know, for you. You got to become a Pacer and kind of get in better shape. Yeah. I know David Thorpe talked about this on the Zach Lowe podcast, just where he had really gotten in a much better shape than what he was previously with Toronto because of how much Indiana likes to run. So I think that if Brook is in drop coverage against the Miles Turner pick and pop or whatever, it's, you know, it's going to be pretty easy for the Pacers to score, I think. So I don't think that the blitzing idea of Bobby Portis blitzing and trying to force the ball out of Ty's hand is actually a bad idea. I think that we might see more of that. And like you mentioned, zone. We saw the Bucks go to zone against the Pacers this year, and that was Adrian Griffin's zone, so it might be different than Doc's. But the Pacers obliterated that, and Andrew Nembhard was a big part of that. Andrew Nembhard had like 6 or 8 points, I think it was, in that in-season tournament game right there in the middle of the paint. Just getting right there in the middle, hitting that little floater. Bruce Brown did the same thing when Bruce Brown was with Indiana. So I think that Indiana's offense is good enough to kind of counter whatever Milwaukee does defensively, because I feel like there's so many weaknesses with Milwaukee's defense based on their personnel. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I think one thing, too, like you're going to probably try to hide Dame on Nembhard for the most part.
Yeah, I think that'll be – that's the starting – the full starting that I picture that they'll do is Dame on Nembhard, Pat Bev on Halliburton. Probably Chris on Nesmith, which I think is – I think they trust Chris more than that, but also they need him offensively a lot, so you can kind of save him. And then, as we mentioned, I think Portis on Siakam and Lopez on Turner to start.
Yeah, and that would – I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all. I kind of feel the same way. I just wondered about that, maybe switching with the cross-matching with Miles and Siakam with Portis and Lopez. But, yeah, it's – to me, I think that one thing, if Indiana is smart, they have to make – Dame work defensively and put Nembhard in more action, because if you've watched anything since Ty's come back from the injury, they've played him off ball a little bit more, and he's worked on some of his go screening and things like that. He's talked with Buddy about screening, but he just isn't as good of a screener as Buddy Hield is. Buddy Hield was so good at that with Indiana, especially with Tyrese. But you know, they allow Nembhard to kind of be on ball and create a little bit more and run the offense through him sometimes just to get Ty off, you know, different looks without just being on ball. Now, they're still going to run a heavy amount of on-ball stuff for Tyrese, but just to throw a different dynamic out there, and I think that's where you got to really make Dame pay and work on both ends of the floor so he's not just saving all his energy for offense, because that's a big thing. But I think defensively it's going to be interesting to see how Indiana matches up with Milwaukee. This is kind of where I want to talk to you a little bit, because
– yeah.
I am a little bit concerned about Nesmith's defense on Chris Middleton.
Middleton,
to me, has size on Nesmith. Nesmith's only 6'5". So I feel like Middleton's kind of the X factor for Milwaukee. I know he's been hurt all year, hasn't had the greatest Chris Middleton season, but like when it comes to playoff time, like I trust Chris Middleton probably more than anybody else on the Bucks. Even
he's been a riser.
He's been so good, and he's been so reliable for you guys. And I think every game that he played this year for in the series against Indiana, he shot over 50%. Like, he shot the ball well. I think offensively, like, he could be your X factor. If he can kind of get back to like 20 some points a game, that could really help lift the Bucks. But I do wonder if Nesmith is going to be able to check him the whole time. You know, the speed I'm not worried about, but the height is what I'm worried about, because bigger wings have a big impact on Nesmith, who maybe isn't he's a good, solid defender. He'll get up in you. But bigger guys, it's hard to guard. And I know Caitlin Cooper brought this up on her podcast with Samson, talked about, could they throw Pascal on Middleton? Yeah. And then maybe put Nesmith on Giannis when he comes back, or maybe even Bobby Portis. I don't know how that matchup would look, but it wouldn't surprise me if they made that switch.
So the interesting thing about the Bucks, and I think they're a weird cover for it, is I think a lot of teams, they have bigger players who you can probably just get away with throwing a smaller guy on because, you know, they're more of spot-up driver players. Whereas the Bucks, I mean, Bobby Portis and Chris Middleton will love to back a player down. I mean, that's their primary offense, frankly. Mm-hmm. So I think it is going to be a little harder. I think the interesting thing for me, and something we've been harping on all year, is The Bucks need to set up Middleton in the half court, not have him be a primary bring the ball up the floor. Like, I think Nesmith's advantage is from the 1 foot on the inbound for the Bucks to, you know, whatever, 18 feet from the rim on the other side. And I think we've seen, I think him and other Pacers force some turnovers from Chris in some late moments in this, the regular season series, because he doesn't have a great handle. But if Chris is able to get like his office there back to the basket 16 feet away, that's where, I mean, Eric Name, who covers the Bucks excellently for The Athletic, has a running thread every year of just the too small thing from I Think You Should Leave, with just all the players that Chris backs down and hits that fadeaway over, because that is his bread and butter. I mean, I think that outside of running pick and roll with Giannis, who obviously is not here, and Chris will run some pick and roll with Brooke and Bobby, and that's fine. Obviously, Dame will run more, but that's really his go-to offensive creation. And that will be very interesting. Like, can the Bucks do a good job setting him up, keeping help away, one? Not that he's, you know, crumbles under a double, but it helps when you're trying to score. And can he get to that spot, and can he set up there without, you know, losing the ball on the way, basically? I think that's going to be huge. And we haven't always seen them go to this, but whether it's Dame, even Pat Bev, and even Pat Connaughton, they've used him as a ball handler off the bench too, just because, like, you know, it's not going to be a Nesmith on PC, right? Like, he's going to be able to get up the floor a lot more unimpeded and then set up players. So that's going to be really interesting to me is, you know, do the Bucks just have Chris go do it, or do they go, hey, let's make this easier for you. Let's take away Nesmith's advantage, which I think is the open floor where he's going to be able to bother Chris's dribble more. But yeah, I think that's going to be a big one to watch. I almost think it sounds silly, but like Giannis may be the one where Nesmith could have the most joy in that matchup, just because being 6'5", we know the offensive foul is easy to pick up for such a big player who does more work driving and more work, you know, being aggressive, whereas Bobby and Chris are more methodical with the way they back players down. Giannis can certainly operate from the post, but his go-to, of course, is not to post up and slowly set up an advantage like that. I wish he would a little more. Obviously, you know, with him not being in the lineup, I miss all of the Giannis game. Not here to nitpick him right now, but that'll be interesting to watch how they use him there for sure. And I think for that end of the floor, I assume Halliburton will guard Pat Bev, and yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, can the Bucks do the same thing you talked about on the other end, which is drag Dame into actions. Can they drag Halliburton into action? So Pat Bev, pretty good screener, has talked about screening for Dame. It's not something they do all the time, but even just moving around off ball, like honestly, his off ball offense may be better for the Bucks than his on ball offense, because he's a very good cutter and he moves and he screens and all these things that, you know, Beasley obviously is a much better shooter, but isn't as good as those other things. It's going to be, I think, really important too. Like, Pat Bev's defense will matter. His offense might be more important, because he's not shutting down Tyrese Halliburton one-on-one. I looked up the matchup data. He obviously hasn't been a Buck since they played, but the Sixers, he played the Pacers a couple times. I mean, Tyrese shot 50% and had like 7 assists in 8 minutes or something, of course, as he does. You know, I don't anticipate that's a shutdown kind of defense, but if he can keep Tyrese moving and uncomfortable on the other end, that could be even more important, honestly.
That's a great point. I mean, if you want to go watch a defensive, you know, meltdown from Tyrese Halliburton, go watch the final 6 minutes of Pacers-Cavs that took place Friday before the season finale. One of the worst defensive efforts I've ever seen from Tyrese Halliburton, and he got caught ball watching multiple times, allowed Max Strus to get free, fouled him on a three-point shot, let him get a wide-open three after he got an offensive rebound. It was just pitiful defense, and that's where people can really attack Indiana, is because Tyrese is, you know, not very strong, and so he's not going to be able to hold his own if he gets switched onto a bigger guy. I mean, Boston, the entire time, every time they played Boston this year, it was, let's get that switch on Tyrese.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Boston, they're a different animal because they have so many guys that can beat you.
They're just a matchup nightmare, yeah, frankly. It's like there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah, but that's what I'm just saying. Like, with Tyrese, like, you can try to hide him on Pat Bev, which is going to be helpful. But if you get him screened on the Dame, like, it's not going to be good. But, like, Tyrese, he just has to be a little bit more willing of a defender, which we saw in different moments. Like, the best defense I've ever seen Tyrese Halliburton play was on the road. They played back-to-back games against Orlando and Oklahoma City and won both those games. And he looked so good against OKC in that game defensively, because he was just like paying so much attention to it. So yeah. I think that Tyrese is a smart basketball player that can kind of fill the lanes correctly defensively and know what he's supposed to do. But there's sometimes where he just gets caught ball watching or just gets a little bit lackadaisical because he's tired from all the stuff he's been doing offensively that he takes his mind off of it. So Pat Bev getting him involved in different things would be very smart for Milwaukee, in my opinion, just to make Tyrese really guard and put Indiana. Now, one thing I will say, the difference between Nesmith and Nembhard defensively, because I think that there could be some times when we see Nesmith on Dame to give Nembhard a break. Nembhard is much, much better at getting skinnier on screens and fighting through them. That's
I wanted to have you highlight that because I think his defense, I think a lot of Bucks fans see Andrew Nembhard and they're like, I don't even know who this guy is. Like, I assume he's not good defensively because he's small, right? I assume he's not a good shooter. Like, but he is actually a very good screen navigator, correct?
Yeah. Very good screen navigator and is so persistent about, you know, keeping with whoever he's supposed to guard. Now, he's going to get beat sometimes. I think the more physical guards, like a Jalen Brunson, have been difficult for him to defend. But Jalen Brunson's been on the tear. So, like, it's been
hard for no one's had great success there.
But, you know, in that game, the game four that I just watched some of the highlights, you know, he started out on Dame in that game. And Dame got to his spots a few different times there. But I think Dame's more of a player that he can kind of hang with defensively. Yeah. He had some good moments in the Cavs game. I brought this up on our podcast a few different times. You know, Aaron Nesmith started out guarding Donovan Mitchell, and Nembhard was guarding Darius Garland. Darius Garland, I think, finished with like 12 or 14 points that game. Didn't have a great game, but about the second half, around the in the middle of the third quarter, they made that switch and put Nembhard on Mitchell and put Nesmith on Garland. And Donovan Mitchell wasn't the same player once Nembhard was on him defensively. So I think his defense is going to be very, very important to the Pacers' success because they don't have a lot of other guys out there that can guard Dame. You're looking at TJ McConnell, Ben Shepherd. That's, you know, McConnell maybe can do it for a few minutes, but that's not sustainable. Ben
Shepherd. Bucks killer, though.
Yeah. He is a Bucks killer. He's been killing everybody, though, recently. Like, TJ McConnell.
He's just a good player. I mean,
50-50, 88, something like that percentage.
Some clear limitations. I mean, I was looking at his shooting percentage. It's like you don't want to leave him open. He also attempts less than one per game, so it's not his comfort zone. But his drives, I mean, he's been able to penetrate the Bucks defense way too easily, and he's gotten offensive rebounds. He's just a good player. He's clearly got some limitations, but a very good player.
His scoring has gone up quite a bit ever since Matt Brennan went down with the injury because now it's been more of, okay, Ben was our second unit guy because Ben started for a little bit, and then they went to Buddy, brought him off, you know, brought Ben off the bench. And then when Matt Brennan ended up getting that shoulder injury, TJ was like, okay, this is my second unit now. And it's been like him and Obi Toppin show with the second
unit. That's a nice second unit action. I mean, that's going to be hard. Milwaukee doesn't, especially without Giannis, it's difficult to guard the lob threats on pick and rolls.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to be very disciplined on stopping Toppin's progress and boxing out. That's been one thing that their focus has waned. They keep talking a big game on playoffs will be different for this kind of stuff. I don't like the habits they've built on the glass, though. I think Portis and Lopez especially need to actually grab the board. I mean, Brooke is so conditioned to box out and let Giannis grab the board. But with no Giannis, that often ends in the other team getting the board. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
So there's a lot to talk about there, obviously, that I mentioned. But, you know, I just feel like if Milwaukee's smart, and they are, like they're going to attack Tyrese as much as they can. Because I think you have to make Tyrese work defensively. If not, then you're letting them off too easy. I think that they have to put Pat Bev in a lot of different actions, or even maybe he sets a screen that gets a switch, and then you maybe go get – now he's stuck on Bobby Portis. Maybe you post Bobby Portis up on Ty, try to get a quick foul on him, something like that. I mean, Ty's pretty good about not getting himself in foul trouble. He'll just give up the play defensively to avoid getting fouls, but that's good offense for Milwaukee if that's the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I want to talk about what they do with that because that switch will happen. I mean, in playoff series, there's going to be times when, you know, Dame is on Halliburton. You don't love that, but it's like, you know, it comes up. That's not the Bucks' plan probably, but stuff happens. I think the important thing probably for both teams, but from the Milwaukee perspective, is, okay, we have Tyrese Halliburton on Bobby or on Dame or Chris, wherever Indiana doesn't want him. Don't just ISO. And I think that's something, you know, the Orlando loss when things got out of hand that last game of the year and they had the two seed right there for them, they started getting Jonathan Isaac on switches and then trying to ISO him, which is like doubly stupid. Like, he maybe I thought like the would be all defensive. He played like one of the best defenders. I was like, okay, people are excited he's healthy. He's not that good. I watched that guy. I was like, oh my God, this guy's a menace. That guy's defense. I picked Orlando in the first round, by the way. I don't like what the Cavs are doing right now. I don't know how Orlando scores enough points to win four games.
That's my fear.
But I know how they hold Cleveland's offense down all the way down, though. I do know that because that guy is – Suggs is good. I think Suggs' defense is maybe a little overrated, but Isaac – when he was off ball, he would come over and block at the rim too. That guy's nuts. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get the switch, and then that's not even a switch you want, but even if it was, the Bucks are too happy to ISO, I think, overall. And they're, even when Giannis has been out, their ball movement makes them a whole different animal offensively. You know, as good as Dame, as good as Chris, and even Bobby Portis in the post, especially against a mismatch, are when they're moving the ball, they get wide open shots, and they're able to. And against this Indiana defense, like we're talking about, I mean, there's a couple players who can D up very well, but it's not obviously a great defensive team. I think bottom six overall in defensive efficiency. The way they play offense makes it harder, but still, the Bucks need to move the ball. They cannot just say, "All right, we have Halliburton on Dame. All right, you can take your step back now." Because, like, no, like, work that. Go to a pick and roll from there. Or have Chris Middleton come over. And they've had some interesting Dame-Chris actions. They haven't done a ton. But that's obviously very hard to guard because if anyone pops or rolls, they're a huge nightmare to deal with. That's going to be an interesting one for me to watch. Just, like, how methodical is their offense once they do get the switch? Assuming it when it happens, I think they're letting him off the hook if they're just, like, I'm going to post up Tyrese five times. I mean, you might get good offense out of it. Maybe you draw a foul or two, but I think the ball needs to keep moving. That's been the best version of the Bucks, whether Giannis is in or out. That's going to be huge to watch. Like, do they just settle and not take great shots and then really let that switch off the hook, which I think they cannot do.
Yeah. I mean, the Pacers kind of can be the same way too. If their offense gets too stagnant, it's bad. And I think ball movement is key for them. And I know that we talk a lot about the series being dictated on what pace the game is at.
Yep.
That's the big thing for me because Indiana wants to run. We know that. Milwaukee wants to play more of a half-court offense and kind of muck it up and slow things down. And I know I've even heard Doc talk about like that. Got to slow the game down because that's what's best for Milwaukee because they're older. They don't want to be running all the time. So I think if Indiana can get out and run, like, it's going to be huge. But I was looking at some stuff. We did our preview earlier this week. And if you look at the fast break points, Indiana won the fast break points in games 1, 2, 4, and 5. And guess what? They won all four of those games.
Yep.
The one time the Bucks won it, they won that game. So I think that's pretty significant to look at there. And then if you look at points in the paint, that was, you know, pretty even, I think, at the end of the day. But Milwaukee, the only game that they outscored the Pacers points in the paint was in game one when Giannis had 50 something points in that first game without Dame.
That was the one where Mathurin locked him up to end the game, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was a 60-40 advantage for the Bucks. But everything else, it was Pacers game two, Bucks game three, Pacers game four, Pacers game five. And so I think if you kind of look at, you know, fast break points, points in the paint, and then if you go to bench scoring, Indiana just dominated Milwaukee's bench. That's kind of, you know, we know that Milwaukee's bench isn't as strong, and part of that is just because of how your roster is built. Indiana's roster is built, you know, based on depth, and there's not a lot of high, you know, salary players this season. Pascal Siakam is the highest paid player right now. Halliburton's contract hasn't kicked in, so you got guys off the bench that are, you know, making more salary than some of the guys that are starting. So it's all plays into that, and obviously Buddy Hield and Mathurin not going to be available in this series. So I don't know how much the bench scoring will be as heavily Pacers as it was, because you're talking
Early in the series with Bobby starting, assuming he is, it could still be skewed. I mean, that's going to be a big question I have is just like, can any of the Bucks bench players make shots? That's going to be huge.
I'm just going to read these off to you based on like what the scoring was per game. So in game
it's going to be nuts.
32-29, pretty fair. Game two was 43-13 Pacers. Game three was 61-28 Pacers. Game four was 70-16 Pacers, and then game five was 59-38 Pacers. So you're talking like massive scoring difference there from the benches. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason why Indiana likes to play so fast, because they have guys that can play that style.
Yeah.
But their bench, you know, they're still scoring quite a bit with a limited bench with Shepherd, Obi Toppin, TJ McConnell, and Jalen Smith. That's kind of been their four, with McDermott in there as the fifth guy, which I'm not really sure if McDermott's going to play a whole lot in this series. But, you know, Jalen Smith is a very interesting player because he only played, I think, two games against the Bucks, and that was when he was starting at the power forward spot, and it wasn't a great fit for him trying to guard Giannis. So he's better off the bench as a backup big who can shoot the ball well. That's one thing Isaiah Jackson does not have.
Exactly. His spacing matters.
So that's where, you know, Jackson's kind of lost some of that spot in the rotation because Jackson was heavily playing backup minutes, and he was playing so good. That's why they started Jalen, because they liked his fit next to Miles a little bit at that time, and they were just trying to get bigger. And Carlisle has said that multiple times when we've asked him. He likes going bigger when he can, when it's necessary, and still have that floor spacing. So one wrinkle I'm kind of curious as if the Bucks' size gets too big for Indiana, with Nesmith kind of being a little bit smaller, could they push Siakam up to the three and go Siakam, Top, and Turner as their front court?
That'd be interesting. I think the size throughout the series is going to be just like a fascinating kind of push and pull effect. Because I think the Pacers initially, if they find success early, could force the Bucks to play smaller. And that's where you could see more Crowder and maybe even more Condon, kind of Middleton combined. Just more of the wings off the bench. And I mentioned earlier, AJ Green, I hope he's given an opportunity to play. I actually think, as crazy as it sounds, he may be the best bench player in terms of guarding Halliburton that the Bucks have. Mm-hmm. He had phenomenal tape earlier in the year on Tyrese Maxey, who's even faster. And that's really what the Bucks just aren't. They're not good at quickness at all. I mean, they're not a fast team. I mean, even Pat Bev is obviously the defensive guy in terms of perimeter players in the starting lineup, but he's, you know, old, right? Like, it's not he's not there to guard the really fast guys. And AJ Green also gives you something offensively. So that's going to be really interesting. Like, how much does he play? Can he knock down shots? Can he guard Halliburton at all? And again, if, you know, your listeners, I'm not saying that second year AJ Green is going to come lock up Tyrese. It's just about making the shots a little harder, or at least staying with him, which, you know, we've seen a lot of Malik Beasley tape. It hasn't been very good at all. His screen navigation is an adventure, we'll say. I'm sure Mr. Rivers will give him a chance to back up those comments, but I could honestly see him losing ground in the rotation if things aren't going well for him defensively and he's not hitting shots, which he has not done since March started. So that's going to be a big one. But I'm more interested in Connaughton. Has been a playoff riser too. He has also not hit shots, but he's done more for them offensively, just does all the little things, but can't really hang with the perimeter. So I think, you know, him on Halliburton, very bad. AJ Green, TBD. Jay Crowder, I think, makes a lot of sense as a Siakam defender. I think he is still a strong-bodied defender. It's the quickness that gets him. But honestly, like, with Giannis out, he may be the one who gains the most in terms of, like, rotation spot. I mean, obviously, Bobby's probably starting, but in terms of, like, minutes from where they'd be at before. Because the thing with Crowder, it's a bad rap from some Bucks fans that gave up the 5 seconds, and it's like, it's a little redundant. Like, they're a little too big. They're a little too slow. They're obviously too old. That's been obvious for years. But right now, like, that is a pretty good guy to guard a four, and that is really what Siakam is. So that'll be interesting to see as well. The pace part of it, the Bucks have really been harping on, like, we need to control the pace by what we do on offense, and that plays into my thing from before of just, like, how good of a shot are you creating? How diligent are you offensively? The Bucks' pace is actually super high, too. I think I looked up higher without Giannis than with Giannis, and I literally think it's because they just jack up shots early. It's not that they're running. They just settle. And a lot, like, I looked it up. They're faster with Brook Lopez on than off. Because Brook Lopez will take that three if it's there, even if he's not open. And that speeds up. I mean, that's pace. That's more possessions because it's a 6 second in the shot clock shot. It's not a good one. But I think the Bucks need to be way more diligent on who's shooting, not letting Brook Lopez jack six threes in the first quarter, and when those shots are coming. Because even if you're not running into it, if you jog up into a shot 6 seconds into the shot clock, that's still a fast pace. And I think they need to not – and just turnovers. I mean, you can control the pace. You can control your semi-transition defense. I don't know if you read this. Their scout team for the Bucks, it's all their young guys. They're not inbounding the ball after makes to simulate Indiana's pace. So, the ball goes in, they just grab it and run up the court to try and simulate what it's like to play, which I actually thought was pretty cool. Smart. But you can't – if they turn the ball over, they're going to be toast anyway. I mean, they just can't afford many turnovers because obviously you know, that's not prep. I mean, you're behind the play. The other team's faster. There's not much you can do except not turn the ball over a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because, I mean, I'm looking at the Bucs' numbers since Doc Rivers took over for Adrian Griffin. I mean, the Bucs were third in pace under Griffin for however 46 games, yeah. Right? 46 yeah. games.
Something like that. 36, so they slowed down a little.
16th in pace. So they're right yeah. in the middle.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it feels like the Bucs are just kind of middle of the pack with Doc Rivers. Like, statistically, offensive ratings, I think 19th now. They were second in the NBA. They fell to 19th. Their defense improved from, 19th to 15th. So they've gotten yeah. better in that area. Net rating, they've gone down a little bit. I think they went yeah. from 4.0 to a 0.6. So it feels like this Bucs team, like, I'm trying to figure out what their identity is because.
So are they.
Yeah, that's why I've been so confused. It's like, I want to be able to come in here and be like, okay, I know exactly what we're going to get into. It just feels like, okay, this is a half-court team that wants to muck things up. And with yeah. Giannis out, like, it was pretty much, okay, let Giannis do his thing. Everybody else kind of play off Giannis. Without Giannis, it makes it a totally different thing. I hope the Pacers don't overlook Milwaukee because that's one thing that Indiana has not done very well this year. Has taken care of bad teams. I know the Bucks had some very bad losses the last week or so
yeah.
against some of the worst of the NBA. But Indiana
yep.
lost to Portland twice. They lost to Brooklyn when they really needed a win on the road.
I think the Bucks lost to Portland twice too. Does Portland have four of their like 10 wins over these two teams?
That's so funny. Yeah, it was just weird.
No, sorry. They were 1-1. They were down like 30 in the first half at home and came back, but then they lost in Portland. So they're 1-1 against Portland.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the Indiana, first one felt like a loss.
Yeah, Pascal Siakam's first game was against Portland on the road. Tyrese Haliburton came back and re-injured himself. He played 30-some minutes in his first game yeah. back with a hamstring injury. What a dumb, dumb decision.
Well, that's Giannis that played 70 combined minutes in a back-to-back against the Raptors and Grizzlies, and the Bucks lost both. That was when I was like, you know, it was like the lowest of the low points.
Yes.
Which is because this has been the Bucks in the Doc Rivers. Up, down, up, down, up,
yeah.
down. Their win over the Thunder showed who they want to be. And this was a great game, a physical defensive team. That's their identity. And I think it's honestly less so on Doc's preference and more on that's what Giannis wants to be. And I think they won all those games. They were healthier in the first half of the year. I mean, Middleton was still on the minutes restriction, but overall they were much healthier than they were in the Rivers era. I mean, I think it's like, I mean, they've only had like four games with all three of their main guys. It's been really pretty ridiculous. I mean, Chris goes down against Phoenix, misses a month, and then Dame and Giannis have missed time since then. I think Chris missed a little more time as well. So it's been very limited sample with their actual players. And I think they want to be a more defensive-oriented team. I mean, they were obviously a great offense early. Doc ruined their offense. I think they also had a very easier first half of the season. Mm-hmm. I think they were blitzing bad teams, but like also like barely winning. Like they were beating the Wizards like 120 to 118. They couldn't guard Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones murdered the Bucks like crazy. No disrespect. Tyus Jones.
Yeah.
With shooting. Like I know he's a good playmaker. So I think they're more capable defensively even if they haven't always showed it. But I think their intensity has waxed and waned to a degree that's not acceptable for any team, much less one that fancies itself a contender. And I kind of think it's just because their rotation is so old and yeah. they've been all these injuries and it's like they haven't been able to sustain it. So that's going to be a big question for me. It's just like I think they're a team that put themselves in a position they have to do the flip a switch thing, which I hate. I hate when teams do this. I hate when teams rely on it. I don't think it's sustainable. But that's where they're at. And I think they could. Like, I think it's possible. But it's just kind of a question mark. But I think to answer your question, they want to be a defensive team who then is able to, even if their offense isn't the prettiest, just be like, well, we have Giannis, we have Dame, we have Chris. Like, we'll score enough in the half court. Now, that was always their issue, right? They could never score in the half court. So they would hold teams down, but then not be able to take advantage. I think the idea is we won't be as good defensively without Drew, but we're going to slow games down and then just late. Like, we won't be guardable and we can win.
Yeah, I will say, like, I never loved the Dame trade for the Bucks. I understood really? Why they did it.
Yeah.
I'm just a big Drew Holiday guy, and I listened to one of your latest podcasts where you guys were talking about. I
ranted about it, yeah.
You know, just Drew just being such a bad – or, yeah, Drew being such a bad offensive player and needing him to do so much more. So I really think, like, this is what you traded, you know, Dame 100%. For. So without Giannis, it puts a lot more pressure on him. And with him going through what he's gone through off the court, the human side of things that have kind of had him up and down all year, you can't like just dismiss that. That's a big thing. And you know, going through a divorce, moving from where you've been at your whole entire career, like it's a big change. Like he's just gone through a lot of changes. But I definitely think like this is why you brought him in here for. And it's a great opportunity for him to kind of prove himself and showcase to the league and to everybody watching, like, I'm still Damian Lillard. Like, I can still do this. And I think that's why, if you're a Bucks fan, you have to feel confident that you can beat Indiana, because even though Indiana's defense has gotten much, much better since the All-Star break, they still are not consistent enough to make you feel like, oh, they can lock down and really defend. They'll do it at times, and you'll kind of be like, man, who is this Indiana team? That's not the team I remember everybody talking about at the in-season tournament, but it feels like a lot of people haven't really watched Indiana since that moment, and they've had a lot of drastic changes to their lineup and their roster. But I just keep thinking to myself, everybody knows that this is Dame's opportunity to really take over. Everyone's counting the Bucks out. Let's be honest. Hardly anybody has given Milwaukee any chance to win this series. And someone that covers the Pacers, like, I don't like hearing that, because you don't want any extra fuel thrown on that fire for Milwaukee to be like, nobody believes in us. Everybody's counting us out. You know, we're good without Giannis, but we're great with Giannis. So we're going to prove to everybody that we still have what it takes. Doc Rivers, probably the most disrespected head coach in the league for all the playoff experience he has. Yep. And if you go back, Rick Carlisle hasn't got out of the first round since he won a championship in 2011.
I got a little roasted for this, but I was reading The Athletic's John Hollinger's kind of like take on every first round matchup. And he threw in there, like, look at their recent postseason track records. And it's hard to say that the Pacers don't have the coaching advantage too. And I was like, Rick Carlisle is a great coach. Doc Rivers has won more playoff games in the last 12 months or more playoff series in the last 12 months than Carlisle has in the last 12 years. Like, and Carlisle hasn't been to the playoffs in a couple of years. Obviously he's building this Indiana team. I'm not trying to roast Rick Carlisle, but to say, like, you know, for all Doc's faults, and obviously he's got them, you know, that's a weird line to draw. To say recent playoff, like, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, Rick Carlisle is 63-70 in the playoffs, so he doesn't have a winning record. Now, Rick Carlisle, to me, is a very good coach.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of Pacers fans that don't love Rick Carlisle for whatever reason. They get mad at him because he's maybe
not. Nobody likes their coach. Unless you're a Heat fan, and even them, so nobody likes their coach. The Warriors are trying to run Steve Kerr out of town. Like, nobody's happy with coaches. Nobody's happy with officials. I think nobody's happy with their three-point defense either. Those are the three things. Every NBA fan is like, we're giving up too many threes and our coach sucks. It's like, everyone's coach is the same and everyone shoots threes.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, like, so many people get mad at the coaching staff or the coach for the Pacers, like, specifically not showing up against teams that are lesser than them. And it's like, you know, that's on the players. Like, they're the ones playing the game.
Yeah.
Like, Rick Carlisle, after the Pacers beat the Nets on, like, on a Monday night, they played them again, like, that next Wednesday. He was like, we can't sleep on this team. Like, he's like, they're going to be ready for us on Wednesday. We got to come out and punch hard. And, like, they got down big in the first quarter. And, like, he predicted what was going to happen because he knows that his team kind of has that mentality of, like, okay, well, we can take our foot off the gas. And that's why I really didn't mean that when I said it. Like, will they take their foot off the gas? Even though it is the playoffs, like, you hope that's not the case. But
yeah,
you know, even if it is the playoffs, I mean, this team has proven time and time again that when their opponent is weaker or weakened, that they take their foot off the gas a little bit. And I don't think that needs to be the case against Milwaukee because they're still very capable. But yeah, I mean, Carlisle's overall playoff record is not great, but I do think that if I'm looking at X's and O's and who's going to make adjustments in this series, I would give the advantage to Carlisle just because we've seen Doc's stubbornness and unwillingness to make drastic changes. That's why he's not been able to get out of the second round for so long. But in this series specifically, like, these are two old coaches that have been around for a very long time. They've coached against each other, I think, two or three times in the playoffs, dating back to, like, 2002, 2003, Pistons, Magic, you know. That one went like seven. I think they coached against each other as, like, Pacers Celtics at one point before Rick went to Dallas, and they had that one series in Dallas against the Clippers when I think the Clippers won that one in six. So, you know, I think Carlisle's maybe up two games or two series to one in that matchup head to head over the last 22, 23 years. But yeah, I mean, the coaching is going to be interesting. I just think Carlisle's a little bit more adaptable with his play calling and things like that. But you know, this is going to be a grinded out series. I don't think it's going to be easy by any stretch of the mean because the Pacers are just too inconsistent. Even if they are maybe the better team on paper with the Bucks not having Giannis, I could see them losing one of the first two games. I really could, just because they get a little over their head. They haven't been here before.
Yeah, I think game one, this is, I've said this is as important as a game one, round one that the Bucks have had in the Giannis era. Like, I really think you lose this game one and you're in then a position to spiral. On the other hand, if you go out and win game one without Giannis, we know for sure he won't play in that game. Not officially ruled out. He's not going to play in game one.
Yeah.
I think that, on the other hand, you're like, okay, now even if something bad happens, we lose game two. Like, worst case, if he's back for game four, we're only down a game. And if he can come back and get us a win on opposing territory, we get our home court back, right? So that is – I think the game one is so – and obviously, you know, if you lose game one and win game two, it's the same spot. But then, you know, you feel a lot better going into the next six, obviously, with a win than with a loss. I think the loss opens the door to some panic. If not in the team, at least among Bucks fans, certainly. I think the coaching will be interesting to watch. I certainly think Carlisle has an X's and O's advantage. I think Doc has been better for this Bucks team than Griffin, even though the record doesn't say that. I mean, they just weren't listening to Griffin, so it's kind of hard to make a case that he would have been a good playoff coach for them if they just were going to ignore him mostly. And they mutinied him out of town, so it is what it is. The interesting thing to see with Doc, I don't think he's done a bad job as Bucks coach. I think he's been okay. It's going to be – people are going to watch for Gallo and for A.J. Green versus basically A.J. Green or Andre Jackson Jr. They need the athleticism. They need the youth. Doc likes vets. He has not always played – he plays more of Gallo as a big, and I do think the Bucks, it makes more sense to go small than big in this series. But if we see game one Gallo in real minutes, then the Doc slander is coming and it's earned. That's kind of like the – that's the thing to look for. Like, I don't think he hasn't done like five-man bench groups, like that kind of stuff. And I remember saying this at the time, obviously way before I ever thought he'd be Bucks coach, I thought he did okay his last Sixers playoff run too. Like, I don't know if he is like this horrible playoff coach that he's made out to be, at least anymore. But we'll see. That could bite me if Gallo's playing in the first quarter, which I just think this is – I mean, I don't think there's any playoff matchup for him anymore. I certainly don't think the Pacers are the one with how fast they move. So that'll be the thing to watch from the Doc perspective, I think.
Just to touch on Gallo real quick.
Yeah.
When Gallo was with Washington this year, they had success against the Pacers with Gallo at the five.
Oh, God.
So if there's any
Doc's going to be pulling up this tape as we speak right now, like, look. We have a secret sauce here.
I mean, Carlisle even talked about it. He's like, yeah, when they went small and put Gallo at the five, they really spread us out. And he really did. He hit like two or three threes in a row. And the Pacers got down to the Wizards, or like they let the Wizards get back into the game because they ended up losing one game on the road to Washington this year. So, yeah, I'm just saying, Gallo, it wouldn't shock me. I kind of forgot the Bucks had him. I really did. Like, that's how
I wish I could, man. Yeah, it's been tough for him. I met him at a Herd game. The nicest guy. So my good friend Gallo, but I think it took him like 3 weeks at his first three as a Buck. And it's just, you know, against this fast of a team, obviously he can theoretically space the floor a little, but I think Brooke and Bobby are your bigs until Giannis gets back and just go small from there.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into our predictions. I've given mine already on this show, but I am curious what your predictions are for this series.
I've been waffling. Like Ego, I was ready to pick against the Bucks. I really was. I settled on Bucks in seven. Okay. I think, you know, as you mentioned, when you go get a second, at least supposed superstar, I've said a lot of not generous things to Dave in the last month. I really, really hope he makes me look stupid. But you get him, you know, to make the team better in half court and to, like, if Giannis misses time, we got another guy, right? So at least hold serve and keep things even. So Bucks in seven, I think they can kind of tread water, bring back Giannis, and then go from there.
Yeah, I picked Pacers in six, and I know it probably sounds homerish, but it's hard not to because, I mean, everybody else is picking the Pacers too. Like, there's a lot of
it's consensus.
They're healthy. That's the big reason why. And they've had success already this season against Milwaukee. I think that confidence does help play a factor in everything here. Because Indiana knows they can walk in here into Milwaukee and win a game. And it's not like one of those, oh man, like we've had struggles with this team for so long, blah, 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 blah. Like, you don't have to worry about those little narratives. It's just like, we've had success against them. We know what works. We can outrun them. They're older. This is a perfect matchup for us. Like, clearly it has been. And I've even seen people say, like, oh, if Giannis was healthy, I still might pick the Pacers. And I'm like, I don't know if I'd go that far. I said that I think it'd be Bucks in 6 or 7 if Giannis was healthy for the whole series. But with Giannis, like, even if Giannis returns, what is he going to be health-wise?
Yeah.
And to me, it's like if Indiana somehow gets up 2-0, that's dangerous territory for Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
And if Giannis is not really healthy, like, is it smart to even bring him back at that point and kind of force him to play? Not force, but kind of rush him back and maybe have him out for longer. But I think basically if I'm picking Pacers in 6, I think Milwaukee wins game 2 and game 5. Indiana wins all 3 on their home court, and they win game 1 and still win in Milwaukee. I just can't envision Indiana winning a game 7 in Milwaukee.
Because you assume Giannis is back for that.
Yeah. I've heard some people say Pacers in 7. I'm like, you think Indiana's going to walk in there and win a game 7 on the road? Like, that's really tough to do. Like, they could do it. Like, I mean, the Pacers of 2017-2018 almost took down LeBron James and that Cavs team in game 7.
Yeah, that was a fun series.
That was on the road. But, like, that Pacers team was a little bit deeper, maybe a little bit different than this team. I mean, you had a lot of different scores on that team. So, I don't know. I just feel like 6 feels right if you're picking the Pacers. I just feel like with all the
I agree with you. I think I think the Pacers' path to winning is you got to jump on Milwaukee early. And I think it is winning 3 out of the first 4. Like, I think that's what you got to do. So even if Giannis is back around the tail end of that, like, he kind of got right back to it when he came back in the finals. But I think he wasn't out for as long, I don't believe. And, you know, it's just like it's been a kind of a touchy thing for him for weeks now. So it may take him a game or two. And we've seen Giannis have great games and the Bucks still lose against the Pacers. But I certainly think, you know, I think Pacers in 6 makes the most sense. And it's like, yeah, we jump on them. Got to win one of the first two. Like, I think if Milwaukee starts out 2-0, then it's really tough for Indiana because you know you're going to get that reinforcement. And the Bucks, I mean, then if they win one in Indiana, that's just gravy. But I think, again, I think in that situation, you probably just give Giannis till game 5. He should be pretty feeling good at that point, you'd hope. And then Milwaukee can just focus on their home game. So, but that's why I went Bucks in 7. Everyone's, Bucks in 6, that's our thing. I was like, I think winning in Indiana is going to be hard. I think this is good. Bucks are going to be not at an advantage going into the last 3 games of the series, I don't think. So that's why I think it comes down to try to get Giannis back, win 5 and 7, and do it that way.
Yeah, and I will say, too, for like the Pacers this year, I don't know if the Bucks have had a lot of losing streaks or not, but the Pacers really haven't had very many losing streaks. They might lose like 1 game or 2 games in a row at the most, but they usually always bounce back after a bad loss or just they play bad in a game. They always respond well the next game, it feels like. So that's why I think it could be a lengthy series. You know, if they, you know, lose game 1, they'll probably come back, win game 2, and then you have that long break before you play that game on Friday. So it's definitely, I think, up in the air. I think what's really the most important to me for Indiana is, can Siakam and Turner outscore Portis and Lopez? Because, you know, I think Miles has to be big in this series. He's got to be the number 3 option for Indiana. He was, I think, the number 2 option for this series, you know, going back. But I think Siakam has to kind of be that number 1 guy. And how does Siakam really kind of change everything with this you know, series? Because we haven't really seen that dynamic. You know, you talk about Jay Crowder, Pat Bev, Doc Rivers. Those are fine players, and those are role guys. But you're not talking about a guy that could be the number 1 option on this team for Indiana.
Yeah.
So I just think, like, how Pascal is able to be kind of, you know, brought into this series and ways they can find spots for him to kind of glow in this series and take advantage of some of the Bucks' weaknesses is huge. And then can Tyrese Halliburton get back to maybe who he was before the injury? I don't know if he'll ever get there with the injury and it needs more time to heal, but having a week off for him, I think, is very, very good for that hamstring.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of funny that for all the differences between these two teams, they're both a little bit in the same spot of, like, whose star duo can mesh first, right? Because I think – you know, the Siakam, I know they're trying to get him to fit more with the Pacers, and it's been a bit of a process. And then obviously Giannis and Dame has not been the turnkey fit that Bucks fans had hoped for from day 1, and the coaching stuff that's gone on certainly played a big role there. And now obviously, you know, Giannis isn't playing right away, but that's going to be interesting to watch too. But yeah, I think it'll be a good series. I mean, we both agree it's going to be a longer series. Excited/dreading game 1. I really do feel like for the Bucks, just the most important game 1 I think Pop. I mean, the year they won the title, they didn't win a game one in regulation the whole time. So they don't have a great track record with game ones. They have come back a lot, and they're used to that. So they won't be, I think, totally down in the dumps if they lose it. But I think winning it sets the playoff run off on the right foot. We'll see. Yeah. I think that's any other last bits that you wanted to throw out there. I think I poured over. I wrote up my thoughts. I'm going to throw it on our Substack. But I think that's pretty much all that I'm planning or thinking of going into this.
Yeah, I will just say this. I think one thing I didn't bring up a lot was Ben Shepherd, and I talked about him kind of being that, you know, backup defender for the Pacers. Right now, if you're looking at defensive guys, Nesmith is a guy that can get in foul trouble early because he plays so aggressive. Nembhard's pretty good about avoiding fouls. He can kind of get himself stuck in some weird spots every once in a while, and depending on how Dame is, could he get Nembhard in foul trouble? I think that could be another storyline to watch, is just foul trouble for the Pacers' wing defenders, because they don't have a lot of other options. And that could also mean, okay, Ben Shepherd, you're our first guy off the bench. Who's the next guy off the bench? You going McConnell as your key defender? Probably not. Is there a way Jairus Walker, the Pacers' first-round draft pick, maybe cracks in there as kind of like this X-factor kind of guy? And I think that could be something to keep an eye on if both Nembhard and Nesmith get in foul trouble, because Jairus Walker – there was one small sample size, trust me. It was against the Clippers, but they had him guarding Paul George. And they didn't have Nesmith that game because he got hurt before the game happened, whatever. So I think he got hurt against the Lakers. So Shepherd started out the first half as the fifth starter. But because Walker came in the second quarter and played so well, Carlisle actually had Walker start with the starters in the second half. And he was guarding Paul George. And he actually stripped Paul George when he tried to cross him over. So, you know, Walker is somebody that I don't think anybody's really expecting to get into the rotation. I'd be kind of shocked if he does. But if foul trouble presents itself early, I think, you know, you have two rookies off the bench kind of, you know, being those backup defenders for the Pacers. It's not a great storyline for Indiana. It's probably something, an area of weakness maybe that they have that Milwaukee could attack. But Ben Shepherd has been so good defensively this year. I have a tweet pinned on my profile of his defensive stop against RJ Barrett against the Raptors before the All-Star break. He had like three different times where he had to stop Barrett and like was just so, so good defensively. He doesn't bite on very many pump fakes, keeps his feet down, hasn't shot the ball particularly well, but he doesn't take bad shots. He just shoots open shots and plays within the flow of the system. So I think Ben Shepherd could be somebody that's a little bit of a surprise to Bucks fans. Like, who is this guy with this looking mustache, you know, because he's been growing out this mustache and he's got the biggest smile. He just loves to smile the whole time. But I think that he could be somebody that is impactful in this series defensively, and he might get stuck a few different, you know, times here throughout the series guarding Dame or guarding Chris Middleton at different points in the series. So I think that's a different element I haven't really brought up a lot, but I think it could be something that's very important, you know, just because of the youth, and that's such a big target for the Bucks to kind of put on the Pacers, like, okay, we're going to get your guys in foul trouble because you don't have a lot of guys to guard us.
Oh, and Dame getting calls versus not, with the way he's shot, his shot has been inconsistent, has been huge for him. So just in general, like, is he able to get those calls will be huge as well. The Bucks rookie, probably akin to Jairus Walker, would be Andre Jackson Jr. I think Marjon Beauchamp, you know, Doc keeps saying, like, maybe. He just has really not gotten into the real rotation at all since Doc became head coach. I don't envision Beauchamp would play, even though he's had some good moments this year. I think Jackson Jr. has his – his energy just changes the whole tempo of games for the Bucks. You know, the Moneyball meme template, like, his weaknesses, he just won't look at the rim sometimes, which is a problem. He shoots threes okay, but, like, he's so athletic and springy, and he'll, like, jump toward the rim and then pass out like Rondo used to do. It's like, just dunk. Just dunk every time, dude.
Yeah.
He'll shoot these crazy floaters, but defensively, he's pretty good. I think some Bucks fans maybe overrate him a little. He draws a lot of fouls. He is, like, as you said, some Pacers struggle with it. Jackson Jr. does a lot, and that's limited his minutes. But offensively, he's had some moments. He's inconsistent. But he just gives them so much burst that they just don't have, so much athleticism. He's had some crazy putback dunks. He's forced turnovers. So that, I think, would be – I wouldn't expect him in the rotation right away. I think A.J. Green has played over him. But that would be, like, akin to the Jairus Walker of, like, either for just a curveball or if someone else is in foul trouble – that could be the guy that enters the series. I think he's probably played a little bit more against the Pacers. I haven't looked at his numbers. He's been in and out of the rotation. He played a lot more under Griffin, for sure. But that's a guy who I think could be the Bucks' answer of, like, well, we've got a rookie we can throw in too, because, you know, our rotation maybe doesn't feel the greatest either sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Bucks bench is probably a little bit weaker than Indiana's, just based on what we talked about and looked at the bench over the series. But yeah, I mean, Andre Jackson Jr. definitely did play a lot more against Indiana. I remember him coming out there and kind of pressuring full court, trying to really slow Indiana down and not let them play their faster pace offensively, getting into it, because you know they love to kind of let the ball roll up the court, then pick it up with like 24 seconds left right at half court, get into their offense and try to score within like the first 5 or 6 seconds of the shot clock. That's just Indiana's pace. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, too, just to go back to Dame real quick to kind of close things out here.
Yeah.
32% overall against the Pacers in the four games that he played out of the five. And he only had one game where he shot above 40%, and he shot 42% in game two. I think that was the one that the Bucks won. That would have been his game, because he didn't play in the first game in November. So that was his best shooting. But like, he shot 1 of 9 from three in one of the games, 3 of 16, was 18 from the field, 6 of 18 one game, 2 of 8 from three. So he shot really bad percentage wise, I should say, against Indiana. And I don't know if it was because of the pace that they were playing and he just wasn't getting the looks that he wanted, or if it was just a bad matchup or things like that. But he wasn't that effective. I know he had a great third quarter in the in-season tournament, but like, aside from that, like, he was 7 of 20 in that game. So in 42 minutes, not the numbers you need.
No, I think their win loss record split is like they have a crazy win percentage if he just shoots 50% from the floor, period, without even looking at how much he scores. And obviously that's going to even be heightened without Giannis, but that's really, I was talking to Tony East about this in the midst of the play and stuff. And he's like, so if Dame shoots well, what do the Pacers do about the Bucks? I'm like, I don't know, man, but I hope we see it at some point, because it really has not happened yet.
Yeah.
So that's going to be just obviously, I mean, we haven't talked about it much, probably should have more. Just Dame's performance is everything, because if he is shooting 7 for 20, Bobby Portis and Chris Middleton can play great. It's probably not going to be enough, because they're not going to be able to shut down Indiana, and Indiana's probably going to be getting out and running if Dame's missing a lot of shots. The Bucks have to be efficient with their offense just to stop the semi-transition. So, yeah, I mean, that's everything. And it's a lot of pressure for a guy in his first season with the Bucks who's had a difficult year, as you laid out. But, you know, this is why you get the big bucks, right? I mean, this is the situation that you get the max and you go trade for the guy and give up your championship point guard and Jrue Holiday for. So this is it. I mean, it's you know, put up or shut up time for the whole Bucks team, for sure, but certainly for Dame most of all. And I think, win or lose, it's probably going to be tied back to his performance in some way. So a huge moment for his first playoff series with Milwaukee.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun series. I know we probably went a little bit lengthier than we had planned on when we first started, but a lot to discuss with this series. So much at stake for both teams, and I think just so many different storylines too. Like, we didn't even discuss the Tyrese Haliburton versus Dame Lillard All-Star MVP debate.
Oh, yeah.
That went down in Indianapolis. Like, we know Dame can hit from the logo, so you know he's had some killer moments.
Yeah, I guess he got comfortable in that building, hopefully, during All-Star weekend. Maybe that'll play into the series.
hope he shot all of his good shots out of there. I mean, hopefully there would be better defense from Indiana than there was in that All-Star game, too.
And Milwaukee, for that matter.
Yeah. So, yeah, but other than that, I think that's pretty much, I mean, we can't really talk too much more about the series. We talked about everything, and I'm sure we've also done different podcasts too leading up to this point. So it's going to be fun. I think game one, like you said, is really big, and it'll tell a lot of how I think the series plays out.
100% agree. So make sure everyone listening, whichever feed you're on, go check out the other one for the opposition intel. I mean, you'll probably, you know, I know maybe it'll be grading sometimes if the other team's playing well, whatever. But I do think hopefully we both conveyed, you know, throughout this combo that, you know, we're not extreme biased homers. I think we're looking at the series objectively. Obviously, you know, we took the teams we took and whatever. But for the Setting the Pace crowd, you can find all of our content at gspn.info or just search up Eurostep Podcast Network wherever you listen to this podcast. And for the Eurostep listeners, do the same. Search up Setting the Pace, or what's the best link where we can send people, Alex, for Setting the Pace?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look on Instagram or Twitter, Pacers Pod STP.
Yeah.
Check that out. That's probably the best way to get a hold of us. We don't really have a website. I have a Substack that I don't usually write too much about. I had to take a break. I was just getting so busy podcasting so often, because we do like a daily episode or daily show of the Pacers. So that's pretty hard to keep up with and write full time, as well as work a 50-hour job. But If you want to check out that Substack, it's theblueandgolden.substack.com. My last name is Golden, by the way, so that is why I just kind of did a play on words there with the blue and
there
golden.
You go.
But like check that. It out. I'm at Alex Golden B on Twitter. I post every single episode on my Twitter account as well. So I'll probably be a little bit of a homer with my tweets, but just know that I'm speaking to the Pacers crowd that is mostly following me and not the Bucks crowd. That's probably not.
Yeah, same here at Ty Windish on Twitter as well. All right, thanks everyone for listening, and game one coming up. Can't wait. I'm excited, nervous, all of it, but it should be a great series. Thanks again for the great convo ahead of it here, Alex.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.